This week on Pop of Culture, we hit the books.
I looked back through the archival record for any instances of just weird stories of supernatural or what people believed was something that was supernatural.
I connected with books as a young person, and I really valued the idea of a kid holding something I wrote.
We'll hear about ghost stories in Muncie.
And we'll sit down with an award-winning children's author.
Coming up.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by Psi Iota Xi. Additional support comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and sustaining members of IPR. You can support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
From IPR, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Kara Duquette.
And I'm Jen Blackmer. Coming up this hour, we talk to an award-winning children's author who will be visiting Ball State for several events open to the public.
But first, it's our last show before Halloween.
Ooh.
So our producer, Luke Jones, talked to another author whose new book is Ghost Stories from Muncie, Indiana.
My name is Chris Fluke. I am a senior lecturer of media at Ball State University, and a volunteer historian at the Delaware County Historical Society.
And Chris, full disclosure, you've worked on projects for IPR before, we've worked together before, but you are here today as a private citizen and an author. Your new book is Ghosts of Old Muncie. Tell us about it.
I had two pandemic projects, and both of which were books. One was a book that I wrote, it was published last year, about grave robbing, and then this year was a book about what I've been trying to advertise as true ghost stories. And what they are is I do a lot of historical research, and I looked back through the archival record for any instances of just weird stories of supernatural or what people believed was something that was supernatural. Ghosts, apparitions, that kind of thing, compiled it all together, and then wrote a book about it.
And you gave a talk recently at Muncie Public Library about your process, and you said, you know, historical archives. It was mind-boggling to me that these are, quote-unquote, ghost stories written about in newspapers.
So it's not really that way much anymore, but there was a there was a period from maybe about 1880 or so until World War I, where newspapers didn't really know exactly what they wanted to be. They were in part journalism with news, but then they were also just a big source of information. So they included all kinds of stuff, fictional stories, outlandish tales, tall tales. And then occasionally when weird things happened in what I believe to be a very much more superstitious population than maybe what we have today, they would write these ghost stories. And most of the stories in the book take place between about 1885 or so and then 1915, 1916.
And why do you think that time period was such a... Why is it not ghost sightings of New Muncie?
I do believe that there are ghost sightings in New Muncie, but if you got a... You know, the Star Press, you open it up, and on the front page, it was like, Luke Jones saw a ghost in IPR station. People would laugh at you. I mean, like, that's not considered serious journalism. So I do believe that weird kind of things happen, but just it's never, no one takes it seriously enough, or people feel maybe ashamed to admit that they saw something, or no one takes it seriously enough to report it. I think that the population was more superstitious, but I also think people understood the literary aspect, perhaps, of what ghosts were. And the newspapers, writers used to like have a field day with the stories. Uh-huh. And I just think it was just a different era of journalism.
Using journalism in air quotes, maybe.
Yeah.
Were there any other, I know a lot of it was from newspapers, were there any other historical archives that you referenced?
So there are, what I wanted to do originally was the every possible ghost story. Every possible ghost story, but then like everybody has, or I would say everybody, but lots of people have stories of weird encounters and supernatural stuff. There was no way effectively to do that. There was a couple of things in Ball State's Bracken Archive, little tidbits here and there of, you know, just something in the written record. Mm-hmm. Most of it did come from newspapers, but Ball State's archive, Delaware County Historical Society's archive, a few books here and there.
And then how did you take all of that information and put it into a readable story in 2024?
So some stories, some particularly in the stuff in the 1890s, like the newspapers would cover these things for like days. And so there'd be like 10, 15 different articles on this one ghost story. And so like I could actually build out an entire chapter. A more modern tale is about the ghost of a woman named, it was like a librarian, her surname was Bly. She may or may not be haunting the sixth floor of the Roberts building. But I wanted to tell the backstory of the Roberts Hotel, her backstory, like her entire biography. She died mysteriously during an air raid drill during World War II. Oh. And that air raid system is still in place today, but for like tornadoes, you know, Fridays at 11, you hear this in Muncie. But that comes from World War II, and I wanted to explain that. So I had a whole bunch, a ton of information that I could extrapolate out into an entire chapter. And then other stuff was just like these little tidbits that like some guy saw a ghost and that's all there was.
Oh.
And then I try to assemble all that together into like chapters that, you know, combine multiple short stories together.
Yeah. Was there anything in the in this process, was there anything that surprised you?
That Muncie is a very haunted place. I mean, like, there lots of people have done ghost stories and ghost hunting and all this kind of stuff, you know, before, but... I was actually surprised at the number of stories that I found. I write this column in the Star Press, and I intended originally just to find like four or five that I could tell in Halloween 2022 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But then I realized, oh my gosh, there's actually quite a lot of stories that I could actually, I think, probably put
a
in
book's
a book.
Worth.
Yeah, that's right.
Could you share one or two of them with us?
Sure, I'd be happy to. One of my favorites is a haunting. I put it in the introduction. It's a haunting of an old theater called the Weiser Grand Opera House. The Weiser Grand Opera House has been long torn down. It was torn down in 1963. It was built in the early 1890s as like a vaudeville. They call it a lot of event venue places opera houses, but it was basically for vaudeville, stage plays. Which it did for many years. And then right around the time of World War I, when movies became a thing, it started showing movies. Well, strangely, in the early 1900s, strange noises began happening at the Opera Weiser House. That's described in the newspapers as gravel from falling on roofs. One was a strange description of like a bunch of furniture falling on the roof.
What?
So, like, strange noises in this building. They couldn't find any source, so they called the Muncie police. And the Muncie police come out. They send out a guy named Curtis Turner, a very stern police officer. It was only, like, five police officers at the time. He was always called for, like, tough cases, where like no-nonsense kind of cases. He comes out, hears the noises, too, and they cannot determine the source for it.
Wow.
So they start interviewing the workers that were there, and they claim that... There was a guy that used to work there named James Linville. He was what was described in the papers as a bill poster, the guy that wore the placards on his chest.
Advertise shows?
Yes, and like, vaudeville show coming up Friday or something like that. He gets tuberculosis, which was a very common disease at the time, starts going downhill, still works, but then tells his colleagues that if I die, I'll come back to see you. And they're all like, funny James, right? Well, James dies, and then all these strange noises happen not long after he's dead. So the workers claim that it was his ghost. And there's two or three articles in the local papers, and then it just stops. No resolution, no, like, we discovered it was a faulty generator or something like that. It's just there's these stories in the paper, and they completely disappear.
That would be, as someone who loves closure, I feel like it would be... That's so funny that they cover it, and then it's just gone.
Yes, yeah.
Interesting, like an actual ghost. How can people find this book?
The best way is to go, you can go to the, Amazon is probably the best way. I don't really make any, I don't make any meaningful money on these books.
Sure.
So whatever way in which you can get it, the library has copies. If you go to the publisher, historypress.com, or just amazon.com, do a search for Ghosts of Old Muncie, and it'll come up.
Okay. Chris Fluke, his new book is Ghosts of Old Muncie. I have to ask before we leave, this is an arts and culture show, but do you believe in ghosts?
I believe, yes, I do believe in ghosts.
Okay.
But I believe that, I think ghosts are more than just supernatural. Like, I think that weird things happen to us.
Yep.
That we don't know what they are. And ghosts is an easy shorthand to sort of explain what that is. Now, whether there are actual physical ghosts, like, you know, like that, I don't know. But I do believe that what we interpret as supernatural is weird things that we just don't have any explanation for.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I think there's so much going on scientifically that we still don't understand that it makes sense if there was, you know, a different plane of existence. Correct. Somewhere that we weren't on yet.
And even if they don't exist, I don't want to live in a world that they don't exist. So I would rather live in a world,
okay,
where my dead ancestors and people I once knew are around me.
Oh.
And maybe in a metaphorical way or in a literary way, that I find that to be more comforting than, you know, we go and just disappear forever.
That's actually... That's a really comforting way to think about ghosts. I don't think I've thought of it that way before.
Well, it's Hollywood. Hollywood, then, it's all bloody things and poltergeists and, like, terrifying. But, like,
okay.
I think it actually, if you read the book, the ghosts are actually quite, with one or two exceptions, the ghosts are actually quite friendly.
Okay.
Or non-terrifying in a non-violent way, let's say.
I like it. Chris Fluke, thank you so much.
Thanks, Luke.
I'm Luke Jones.
I'm Jen Blackmer.
And I'm Kara Duquette. We're going to continue our book theme now.
I am so excited to be here today with Professor Jill Christman. Jill is a professor of English here at Ball State University, and she is also director of the Ball State Writer in Residence Program. Welcome, Jill.
Thank you so much, Jen. It is a thrill to be here.
Now, we're here to have a conversation about the Writer in Residence Program, and I'm super excited. Later in the broadcast, we're going to be talking with the writer-in-residence this year, Hannah Kahn. So, Jill, can you tell us a little bit about the writer-in-residence program?
I am thrilled to do that. First of all, thank you for having me here. The whole idea of this program is to serve the community of Muncie, and so it seems right to be on this program. So thanks for having me.
Of course.
Well, it's just to start historically, we began the program with my colleague Mark Neely back in 2021, and we've been building something pretty great. So last year, we brought in Alicia D. Williams, and we used most of our budget to buy books. And so we bought almost 1,000 books last year of copies of Alicia's book, Genesis Begins Again.
And you shared those with students, right?
And we gave them away.
Yes.
Anybody who wants a book, any kid who expresses interest in a book, I put a book in that kid's hands.
Amazing.
That's what's behind the program here. So we put books in kids' hands. We put materials for studying those books in kids' hands. We run around the town and try to get people excited. The author makes videos for the kids before they even step onto campus. And then the author comes to campus for a week. And this year, that week will be October 28th through October 31st. So you can remember because it's almost Halloween. But before the Halloween parades begin and the candy is eaten, we will get the writer safely off campus and away from the schools.
So before we get into this year's writer specifically, how do you choose your writers to participate?
Well, that is a very good question. So we want the person to be a really high caliber in terms of the amount of work they've published, the kind of attention that work has gotten, how much kids love that work. So we also support this writer as well as we can. And so publishers are interested in having us bring this author to campus. And so they send me books and I read a bunch of books.
Yeah.
And then this year, actually, because Alicia was such an amazing guest, I asked her, I said, because not only does this person have to be an amazing writer and a prolific writer and a writer that kids want to read, but this person has to be good with our students.
Absolutely.
Right? And Hannah Kahn, our visitor for this year, was at the very top of Alicia's list. So Fundamentally, we chose through word of mouth.
That's okay. That's excellent. Yeah.
And that's how we chose her. And then I have conversations with the people and I see if we're a good match for each other. And that's how it came to pass.
And that's awesome. So tell us a little bit about Henna Khan and her work. And as I said, we'll be talking directly with Henna a little bit later on. So what was it about her work that stood out to you?
Yeah. So we wanted to have someone who had a breadth of work. And so Henna does both children's books and middle grade books, and was also at the time working on a graphic novel, which has since been released, called mm-hmm. We Are Big Time.
Right.
And that book is about, and I quote from the book's materials, an all-girls hijab-wearing basketball team from Wisconsin.
Yeah, I'm looking at a copy of it right now, and it's fantastic.
And I was fascinated by the way that Henna, I know the story now, Henna had heard about this team and had gone out to meet the coach and meet the girls and was so inspired by the season that they had that she decided to do this graphic novel, so a fictionalized version of their story. And I was just so taken by the story of the story.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I wanted, absolutely.
And I knew that would be inspiring to our students here in Muncie. So I wholly encourage everyone within the sound of my voice to go to Henna Khan's author site and take a look at all of her books. And also, of course, to go to our website where we have made a clearinghouse of all things Henna Khan. And that is at www.bsu.edu/writer-in-residence, all one word. And there you'll find more information about Henna and all of her books and also all of the events that will be going on during the week that she's here. One thing I've learned, I've been running writer-in-residence type programs or visiting writers types programs for, 30 years now. Mm-hmm. And one thing I have learned about that is that if readers have access to books first and read the books and engage with those stories, by the time we get that person on campus, everybody's all in. And that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to make it a full experience, not just a thing where you go sit in a room and you listen to an author, right?
Excellent. Well, and with that in mind, there are a number of events coming up that are open to the public. So we have October 28th. Is Writing for Young People at the Student Center. That seems fairly self-explanatory. Can you share what Henna will be doing there?
Yeah, absolutely. So on the first evening she's here on the 28th, she'll be in the ballroom here on Ball State's campus, and where you might note that parking is free after 7 o'clock. For that event, Henna will be giving a talk on writing for young people, right? Yeah. And it will be geared towards Ball State students and folks who are working on their own writing, but completely family friendly. And we'll be doing a literary fair around that event, and there will be snacks, and the author will be there to sign books. So I hope that families will consider coming to that.
Excellent. And will folks be able to get books at that event as
yes,
well?
Yes, we'll okay. also be selling books.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. And then October 29th, we have Pizza Party Meet and Greet at the Ross Community Center.
Yeah. So another thing we have learned is that sometimes everybody can't make it to campus.
Absolutely.
So we will come to you. we go, and by the way, we go out to the schools during the day, but at the Ross Community Center that night, if you come out to the event, we will feed you. We will be running activity tables for kids where we'll be doing drawing and writing. And Henna Khan herself, of course, will be there talking some about her writing and, again, signing books.
Excellent. And then on October 30th, again, day before Halloween.
Yes. Again, totally family friendly. This one is an interesting choice. I have moved it to 1:30 in the afternoon. So it's during the school day on purpose. And this was so that some community groups would be able to bring their students who are in school during that time. And Henna will be doing a short reading from one of her stories, and then most of it will be a conversation with Ashley C. Ford about writing and publishing and storytelling. And really, if I know Ashley, and I actually do know Ashley quite well, she will be trying to highlight Henna Khan's work and also show Muncie community folks, and specifically the young people in the Muncie community, what is possible for them, right? And that storytelling is life-saving. And as Ashley likes to say, you can't be it if you can't see it.
That's right. And Ashley, I remember from the previous visit, is unbelievably inspiring. So,
oh my gosh, yeah.
And I'm continually, I've just been thinking this during this whole conversation about what you said earlier, is if you can get books in hands of kids, and dare I say everyone, that those can be world-changing experiences for them. Yeah.
It was just incredible last year. I was in awe of these students the entire time that Alicia Williams was here, because most of them had never had a meeting with an author like that. Most of them had never had the experience of having a book signed by an author. Mm-hmm. I would ask, how many of you have never had a book signed by an author? Mm-hmm. And the hands would all go up, and the line would form. And there was just so much excitement. The teachers at Northside Middle School had some of their students write letters to Alicia Williams afterwards. And they said things like, "This is the first time I've ever read a book from front to back," right? So to see the students have the opportunity to really engage with these texts and then really engage with the authors who wrote them is a wonderful thing. And I hope that we can continue to make this happen for them.
Awesome. Well, Jill, I can't thank you enough for spending some time with us to talk about your program.
Thank you so much for having me. It has been a delight to be here. Thanks for all you do.
And if you missed it earlier in our interview, the website for more information on the Writer in Residence program is bsu.edu/writer-in-residence. We've been talking about Ball State University's Writer in Residence program, and we're here today with Hannah Kahn, who is the author of We Are Big Time and Writer in Residence, our upcoming Writer in Residence here with the Department of English at Ball State. So if you could just introduce yourself, let us know where you're calling in from.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me on. I am in Maryland, outside of Washington, D.C., which is where I was born and raised. And I'll be traveling over the weekend to Muncie and for the first time. And it just sounds like a wonderful opportunity to connect with different audiences and lots of kids and talk about writing and get kids excited about reading. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, that's excellent. And we're happy to welcome you to Muncie here for the events in the Writer in Residence program. So, Hannah, tell us a little bit. How did you become a writer?
Well, I think I was always a writer at heart, although I would have never called myself one when I was a child. Even as a teen, I eventually started working in public health communications. And then I guess I considered myself a communicator. I was doing a lot of writing and editing for international public health organizations as my first career. And then when I was a mother for the first time, this was more than 20 years ago, and reading a lot to my young son, I had the chance to start writing for Scholastic book clubs because of a friend of mine from childhood who encouraged me to work on a few books in different series. And that's where I first had the idea or the notion of writing for kids, because it had never occurred to me. Once I started doing it, though, I realized I loved it. And I loved reading as a kid. And I loved the way, you know, I connected with books as a young person. And I really valued the idea of a kid holding something I wrote.
There's a wonderful feeling, right, when the thing that's been in your head becomes tangible.
Absolutely. Yeah. I still can't get over it every time I hold a new book. So, so that's how it started. But it really, you know, I think like many people, I was always a writer. I just don't know if I would have believed in myself to start writing creatively until I had a friend, you know, pushing me. And I slowly started thinking about the books that I wish I had as a kid. Mm-hmm. And I wanted my children to have a different experience than I did growing up and actually see themselves and their lives included on the pages of a book. So that's what motivated me to start writing books that did include characters that resemble me and my family.
Oh, that's excellent. And you mentioned writing for the Scholastic Book Club. Was that your first sort of professional writing experience?
Yes. Other than, you know, writing reports and summaries and things like that for international organizations, which were more internal publications. For a while, I was doing both types of writing, and I realized that writing for kids was helping me so much in my day job, because I was working with a lot of researchers, demographers, academics who were using a lot of data and very attached to their data and wanting to give lengthy explanations of, you know, every finding. And I was like, let's get to the point, you know, and writing for children really helped me hone that, you know, skill of just sort of giving people what they need in a clear way.
Oh, that's excellent. I love that. So you mentioned you're a children's book author and you write for middle grades. At what kind of readers do you try to reach with your work?
Well, I actually write across different genres. So I do actually write picture books as well. But for middle grades, which is sort of a strange designation that doesn't mean a lot to people outside the industry.
Sure.
We refer to as really upper elementary through middle school. So that 8 to 12, or you could say 8 and up age group is what we put in the middle grade bracket. Although I really don't like the fact that they put an upper age limit on books when they give that age range, because I firmly believe that, you know, books written for young people featuring young protagonists can be read by anybody and really be enjoyed by anybody, because mm-hmm. that's what I primarily read now.
Yeah.
I just find that the storytelling, it is a little quicker because the books are shorter than you would find for, you know, maybe young adult or adult fiction, but just, you know, just great clean storytelling that gets to the heart of the issue or the problem of the narrator really in an unfussy way a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So I really do love writing for this age group.
I love that. And the idea that just because the protagonist is younger doesn't mean that people of all ages can enjoy the book. I love that idea. Talk to me about writing for middle schoolers in particular. I mean, you mentioned earlier that you became a writer of books for kids when you became a mother. And that is a something that you and I share. And middle school, middle grade, call it what you will, in particular, the tween years are really difficult for kids. And what do you think readers of your books in that particularly rough patch sometimes the kids in those grades can experience? What can your readers find in your work?
Oh, thank you. Well, I find that, you know, a lot of times, even though, like I said earlier, like I am writing about young people, some of the questions I'm exploring or the feelings that I'm writing about are things that I might still be dealing with as an adult. I think a lot of the things that we experience as children stay with us, or the same concerns are something we, you know, we think about as adults as well. Things like, you know, is this person still my friend? Or how do I be the best at something? Mm. Or how do I juggle, you know, different competing demands of my time? Or how do I manage this new anxiety that I haven't learned to deal with yet? In my recent middle grade novel, Drawing Dina, that came out in February, I wrote a lot about things that I'm thinking about now, like what does it mean to be an artist and make yourself vulnerable and put yourself out there for other people to critique. Mm-hmm. And especially in the world of social media, you know, how do we juggle the very practical and useful reasons to use social media with some of the bad, you know, things like that. So I find it, you know, a way to really explore a lot of the things that I'm still thinking about, but definitely taking me back to what it was like to be that age and navigate the world, you know, kind of trying to process these very big things and oftentimes big changes.
Yes, absolutely. And you mentioned we're all still trying to process that as well, I think, regardless of what age we are. So that's lovely. You mentioned your new book, and we received a copy of another new book, and you are incredibly prolific, by the way. So you have a lot of work that is coming out that you'll be sharing with us when you arrive. But we have the graphic novel We Are Big Time, which I just loved. So can you tell our audiences what it's about?
Sure. Yeah. So It is my first graphic novel, and it just came out in August. And it is based on a true story of a girls' basketball team in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the Salaam School girls' team at an Islamic school, all hijab wearing. Mm-hmm. And I was shared a video story about this team by an educator who thought I would find it interesting because I'd written about basketball in the past. And I have a protagonist, Zaid Salim, who loves basketball. And she said, I thought you might find this interesting. And the more I read about this team and their amazing turnaround season and the way they went from being a pretty horrible team to a team that started winning unexpectedly and getting a lot of attention, I found it so captivating. And I read everything I could about them. And then I actually reached out to the school to see if I could by chance speak to someone. And they connected me to the coach of the team. And she connected me to several players on the team. And I got to interview all of them. And I just loved what they had to say and what else I could learn from their experience that was sort of beyond the news story that was covered. And I wanted to make it a graphic novel because I thought that, you know, we don't often see a group of hijab wearing athletes.
Right.
And it was something I wanted to include. And it was also, I realized, a lot easier to show people basketball than sometimes it is to describe it.
Absolutely. So, yes. And the visuals are very striking in the book. And you mentioned that the girls on the team wear hijabs, and the main family in this book is Muslim, and mm-hmm. your books also feature Pakistani American characters. So, how do you approach writing your stories and characters who might be unfamiliar to some readers? How do you approach that dynamic?
Yeah, so. Yeah, I probably should have mentioned that earlier when I was talking about representation.
No, it's all right.
That, you know, I am a Pakistani American Muslim child of immigrants. And so a lot of the characters I write are either similar to me, you know, being the child of the children of immigrants, or even like my children being third generation mm-hmm. Americans who have grandparents who've immigrated. And, you know, for me, it's always been, a conscious decision to highlight families like mine. But I've always wanted the reader who is like me or my children to not feel like they are a social studies project in a way, you know, their life doesn't have to be a glossary term. And in a longer story, in picture books, I might, you know, highlight certain aspects of being a Muslim and then I include glossary. But in a narrative, you know, long form novel, I feel like your story should just be centered and you get to be the main character and your life and the things that are familiar to you shouldn't have to be explained. And people will really pick up on what that food is or what that greeting is or what that tradition is through context clues and through, you know, what your character's doing. Mm-hmm. And I find that, you know, readers of all backgrounds tell me that they see themselves in my characters. They see huge similarities between the families I portray and their own, even if they're from other backgrounds and other cultures. So that's why, for me, I try not to talk down to anyone and just sort of include those little details. And it's almost, I think of it as, you know, the seasoning or the spices that I add to my books that make them feel authentic.
Well, that's excellent. I actually think it's wonderfully telling that you didn't start with representation, that in fact, you know, what is centered here is the story and the characters, and the representation, as you say, is a part of sort of the whole package, but not necessarily the only thing that is highlighted in this wonderful kind of come from behind story of this particular team, but then in all your books. I think it's lovely. Well, we're just so looking forward to having you in Muncie. You're going to be here October 28th through the 30th, and you'll be doing events with schools and with the public as well. What are you looking forward to the most?
Well, one thing that I love is that Jill has been so kind to get a lot of my books into the hands of young people. Mm-hmm. So they will have already had time to engage with the text and hopefully read some of them. And that is always so gratifying as an author to get to speak to audiences where they've actually read your work and thought about it and have questions and insights. I always am so amazed by what they have to say. So I'm really looking forward to that. And just getting people excited about reading again. I feel like we're hearing a lot about it in the news. We're hearing about it in the industry, just that, you know, people aren't reading as much. And I'm such a believer in it, and not right. just because it's my job, but also my whole life, I feel like, has been defined by reading. And I do know there are so many distractions and things to pull us away from books, but I really believe in their power and their importance.
Well, I do too. Hannah Khan, we are so excited that you were able to spend some time with us today. We're looking forward to the events next week. And thank you so much for your candor, for sharing your work and your love of books. And we're very excited. Thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to Pop of Culture. I'm Jen Blackmer.
And I'm Kara Duquette. Jen, we've been talking about books and writing the entire show today.
We have.
We thought we'd pull a recent interview off the shelf. Librarian Hannah Elliott read through some terrifying tomes for Halloween and brought her short list to Michelle Kinsey. Hannah Elliott at the Jay County Public Library is joining us, and we are so glad because, A, it's her favorite month of the year, and B, she comes loaded with all sorts of recommendations for spooky season. Hannah, thank you so much for joining us. How you doing?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Good. And I said from the jump that this is your favorite month. And why is that, Hannah?
Oh, Halloween.
Yeah.
I love Halloween. I love the fall. October is like the perfect fall month. So yeah. It's just a lot of fun for me.
Yeah. So what are the books that are going to be flying off the shelves, either as bats or broomsticks, this spooky season?
Yeah. So I brought with me today four recommendations and four books that I think are going to be really popular this month. The first one is called Horror Movie by Paul Tremblay. It just came out and I read it. And it's basically another book about the whole cursed film set that becomes haunted. Ooh. And there's all kinds of stuff that happens. And I read it and it was pretty good.
Yeah?
It was, yeah. I feel like it was a good good version of this type of genre, basically. It definitely had a mind-bending conclusion, in my opinion. So basically, like, they had filmed the movie and then only three movie scenes were released to the public because there's all this stuff that happened and cast member just died and all that. So they're trying to get them to reboot the film, and only one cast member is still alive. So they're trying to talk him into doing it. It's that whole thing. But it was pretty good.
Oh, wow.
So that's one.
I didn't realize the cursed movie set was a whole kind of a genre or a whole theme.
It is. There's been a few other books out this past year where they've done it, where you get to read like the movie script and things happen. And I just watched a movie yesterday called The Exorcism, but it's not The Exorcist because I was like, oh, what is this? But it has Russell Crowe in it, and it's that whole thing too. So we were like, oh, this is pretty good, you know? But I feel like it's definitely starting to emerge. It's not something that really is like been classic horror.
Yes.
So I feel like it's definitely something that's emerging though. But if you liked Cabin at the End of the World, you'll definitely like Horror Movie. So that is one that just came out and it's starting to get popular. Another one, this is a huge thing for Stephen King fans because Stephen King just released his new collection of 12 short stories called, the book is called You Like It Darker. And then he named it that because his fans were like, no, we want darker like stories and themes and all this. So he's like, okay, you want it darker, I got you, basically. And that's actually one of his quotes, like in the beginning of the book, which is kind of funny. But 12 new short stories, first time ever getting published. He focuses on the darker part of life, both metaphorically and literally. And one exciting story in this book, if you love Stephen King, is he actually did a sequel to Cujo. So the short story is called Rattlesnakes, and it's like a sequel to that. If you aren't familiar with Cujo, it's a rabid St. Bernard dog that's a killer. He gets bit by a bat. And
all those scenes are running through my head now. Oh, that movie.
And there is a movie of that too, so definitely check that out. But this is the sequel, and it's basically that a grieving widower travels to Florida, and he's looking for a respite, but receives an unexpected inheritance with major strings attached. So I'm curious to see what he does with that. But if you're a Cujo fan, you finally get a sequel in the 12 short stories. So
I am absolutely checking that out.
Oh, yeah, for sure. If you're a Stephen King fan, get excited. I'm not going to go into all the stories because I don't want to spoil it, but there are a lot of cool stuff going on in there. The next one is one I am so, so excited to read myself. I haven't done it yet. It's on my to-be-read list for October. It's called Incidents Around the House. It's the new Josh Malerman book, who he wrote Bird Box. So if you're familiar with that. This actually released in June, but it's just now starting to pick up speed because of October. But basically, it's, you know, the whole thing about a haunting told from the perspective of a young girl whose troubled family is targeted by an entity she calls Other Mommy. So if you love the creepy, you know, kid haunting, all that vibe, there is another mommy. So it follows 8-year-old Bella. She has her mom, her dad, and Grandma Ruth. But then there is this other mommy who is a malevolent entity who asks her every day, can I go inside your heart? So that line definitely intrigued me. It's definitely going to be creepy. I feel like Josh definitely writes creepy well. So
that just gave me chills. I just got chills.
I'm so sorry. No, I'm not. Not really. But
I know you're not. I know you're like, yes.
Yes, I know. So that one, definitely check that one out if you're into that. And I definitely will be. So maybe later I can follow up and let you know how that is.
Yes, please.
And then the last one that is really popular, Rachel Harrison, who wrote Such Sharp Teeth last year that went really popular, is back and just released So Thirsty. It's exactly what it sounds like. It is a vampire novel. Basically, this one is a woman and her husband sends her off on a trip with her best friend. And, you know, there's some trouble in the marriage. So he's like, just go away with your friend, have some time off and whatever. So the best friend tries to get the main character to live a little and like stop stressing.
Yeah.
They find she sets up like an encounter with a strange group of people is what they're saying is in this book. And basically the premise is they turn into vampires and it's life changing and there's consequences. So,
wow.
I'm also curious to check this one out because I love a good vampire novel. So we'll see. But yeah, that's the four that I think people are really going to be talking about this October. And I personally am excited to get into some of these. So,
you know, I love that, Hannah, because I always feel like you bring such a variety. I mean, that was a lot of different types of spooky stuff. Surely if you are into that kind of stuff, as you know, you should be this season, right? Then you will absolutely find something that will give you chills like I just got like three times during this conversation. So I know there's a couple books I'm going to be picking up, especially I absolutely want to read the Cujo follow-up, the short story that Stephen King just put out. Hannah, thank you so much for joining us with another amazing list of recommendations. And if you want to get a hold of those, you better put them on reserve now at your local library or go pick them up because they're probably going to be very popular. Thank you so much, Hannah. Appreciate it.
You are welcome. Thank you.
Time for this weekend's arts calendar. Kara, you ready?
Yeah, it's getting good.
All right. We should mention here at the top that IPR is casting for our annual holiday radio drama, A Christmystery 2, The Case of the Missing Mrs. Open auditions are Monday, October 28th and Tuesday, October 29th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the IPR studios. No experience is necessary. Our studios are on the Ball State University campus in the David Letterman Communication and Media Building, room 128. No appointments are required. Please bring a friend and come try out.
I shouldn't say. I'm coming.
Good!
The lid is open on a new exhibit at Minnetrista in Muncie, Crisis Canning, an original exhibition that explores the history of canning. Learn more about the ancient and global art of food preservation and explore how wars, pandemics, and economic struggles have transformed canning into a form of emergency planning for Americans across the decades. Hours and details at minnetrista.net.
The City of Marion's annual Fall Festival happens Saturday, October 26th from 2 to 5 p.m. Toss on your favorite flannel and cozy up with a bonfire, s'mores, pumpkins, carnival games, costume contests, music, and more. Stroll through the Fall Mall to see autumn offerings from craft vendors and small businesses. Info is at showmegrantcounty.com.
Oh, that sounds exciting. And I was recently in Portland and I got some flannel.
S'mores with an exclamation point.
S'mores.
S'mores.
Duke Tomato is a blues guitarist, vocalist, and songwriter who was the founding member of REO Speedwagon. He has released 15 albums as a band leader with his band, Duke Tomato Trio. He typically plays more than 100 dates per year, and one of them is Saturday, October 26th at the new Gas City Performing Arts Center. Tickets to the show are at gascitypac.com.
100 dates per year? That is one hardworking musician. Ball State's Department of Theater and Dance is wrapping up its production of the play Revolt, She Said, Revolt Again by Alice Birch. The performances are in Strother Theater. Performances are Friday and Saturday evenings at 7:30. You can get tickets at bsu.edu/theater. And just for our listeners to note before coming out, there is a content warning. You need to be over age 18 with language and situations.
Dia de Muertos is next Friday, November 1st. The Idlejorg Museum in Indy has an exhibit open to the public of beautiful community-created altars or offerendas through November 2nd. Take time to admire the artwork and honor your own departed loved one.
And of course, just before that, Halloween is Thursday, October 31st. Please enjoy the holiday safely so you can join us for Pop of Culture every Friday and Saturday. And if you think of an event that would be a real treat for our listeners, see what I did there?
Good.
Ring our doorbell at indianapublicradio.org/popofculture.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by Psi Iota Xi. Additional support comes from the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and sustaining members of IPR. You can support local programming today at indianapublicradio.org.
And that's our show. This week was produced by Luke Jones, whose favorite style of writing is the out-of-office message. Our show was hosted by me, Jen Blackmer.
And me, Kara Duquette. Pop of Culture is a production of IPR on the campus of Ball State University.